Thanks for tuning in for the Book Club at 91.7 on this Saturday morning. I'm Mark Purcell. Marijuana has been in the news quite a bit lately, whether it's for the election and the question about whether to legalize it or whether medical marijuana might be a path to take. There's a new book out that might help settle some of the arguments for and against, and it gives me a great honor to welcome David Cassaret, M.D., author of Stoned, A Doctor's Case for Medical Marijuana, to the Book Club at 91.7. Good morning, Doctor.
Good morning. Thanks. Great to be with you.
As I said, it's been a topic of conversation in many different venues, but I want to ask what you as a medical doctor had happened that you decided you wanted to explore more about the case for medical marijuana.
Sure. It was actually a patient I took care of about 2 years ago who had advanced cancer and asked me whether I thought medical marijuana might help her. And I told her what I learned in medical school, that marijuana is legal, it's an addictive drug, it has no medical benefits. And she reached into her handbag and pulled out a couple of reprints of articles that she had found online of randomized controlled trials of marijuana for pain like she was having. And in that moment, I had to admit that this patient of mine knew more about medical marijuana than I did as a palliative care physician. So I promised her I would look into it, I'd do some research and give her some advice. And in the process, I realized that if I didn't know much about this stuff, then a lot of other people, including my patients, my colleagues, and legislators, probably didn't know either. And that's what prompted me to turn that research for my patient into a book.
So when it comes to marijuana, there are two different compounds in marijuana that affect the human body, THC and CBD. Please tell us about these two substances.
Well, a little bit of background first. There are actually a lot of substances in marijuana. There are more than a dozen molecules known as cannabinoids that are present in marijuana, and there are more than 100 synthetic cannabinoids like THC and CBD that have been produced in laboratories. So we can talk about THC and CBD. Just keep in mind, those are only the two that we know the most about. So THC, or tetrahydrocannabinol, is the cannabinoid, the substance in marijuana that's responsible for that high feeling of euphoria, makes you feel good, makes you feel loopy, also is responsible for some of the negative effects like anxiety, paranoia, sometimes hallucinations. CBD, or cannabidiol, is also present in large amounts, and it doesn't have any psychoactive effects, as near as we can tell. It might be useful in other ways, maybe for pain management or inflammation, but it's kind of the quiet cousin to THC. It doesn't have any of those effects on the brain, but it might have therapeutic effects. And if your listeners have heard about so-called Charlotte's Web or cannabis oil that's used for pediatric epilepsy, those are concentrated oils that are almost exclusively CBD. So these parents aren't giving their kids pot, they're not giving their kids marijuana, they're not giving their kids anything to get them high for the most part. They're giving them these oils that have this quiet cannabinoid, the CBD, that might have therapeutic effects for seizures, but doesn't cause that euphoria feeling.
Well, and I want to, just as there is a difference between THC and CBD, I want to make it clear that your book, Stoned, is very objective. You're not arguing one way or another, correct?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, honestly, when I started this process, I thought medical marijuana was a joke, that it was just an excuse to get high. And I've become convinced that there really do seem to be some significant medical benefits. I'm not sure it's the right decision for everybody. It's certainly not the wonder drug that lots of people claim. Some people say it cures cancer, it prevents Alzheimer's disease. It doesn't do a lot of the things that it's advertised to do, at least as far as we know. But there is some benefit to it, probably more benefit than its opponents are willing to admit.
I'm speaking with David Cassaret, M.D., the author of Stoned, A Doctor's Case for Medical Marijuana. You can learn more about it at our website, wvxu.org. But I was surprised as you went through the process, David, of and explored what was going on, that there is so much that is unknown. People make a lot of assumptions when it comes to medical marijuana.
Yeah, they do. And I think it's important for listeners to know there actually is some data. As I described, my patient pulling those reprints of randomized control trials out of her handbag, there have been randomized control trials for using marijuana in the treatment of so-called neuropathic pain, meaning pain that's due to nerve damage. Often happens after trauma, with diabetes, with some autoimmune diseases like lupus after chemotherapy. So there is some of that evidence out there. But honestly, if you look at the indications, the so-called qualifying conditions that get you access to marijuana in the 23 states plus the District of Columbia, in which it's legal now for medical use, a lot of states allow uses for indications for which there's no randomized controlled trial evidence at all. Post-traumatic stress disorder is a good example. It's legal for that use in California. There haven't been any randomized controlled trials yet. Many veterans I've spoken with swear by it, but do we actually know that it works based on a randomized controlled trial or two? No, we don't, not yet.
And part of the reason is, and I think you stated, I hope I'm not giving attribution where it's not appropriate, but many times throughout the book you say there really is no medical marijuana research going on. I mean, it's just kind of impossible with the restrictions to be able to do good studies.
It's partly true. I wouldn't say there's no medical marijuana research going on. I've talked with a lot of researchers in the process of researching the book, and they'd probably be offended if they heard me say that. On the other hand, I think they would also say that there's not nearly as much research as there should be, and it's much harder to do the research than it should be. I've certainly talked to researchers. A perfect example, is a woman named Sue Sicily, who's a physician in Arizona, who's been trying for the last 4 years or so to do a randomized controlled trial of marijuana for PTSD. She has the funding. She has people who are willing to enroll in the study. She just can't get through all the hoops that are required for federal approval and for approval at her home institution. So we could honestly have an answer right now about whether marijuana works for PTSD, except she's still waiting to get that trial going. So there certainly is some evidence out there. There's some research going on. There's some researchers who are really trying valiantly to get this research done, but there's not as much as there should be, and there's not as much funding, and there are too many barriers, which really slows the process down.
Well, we've heard a lot in recent news stories, especially with Colorado and the recreational use of marijuana and its availability there and all the different products that supposedly deliver what marijuana has to deliver. But you point out in your book, Stone, that many of these delivery systems aren't really effective.
I guess I would rephrase that a little bit to say that some are more effective than others.
Okay, yeah. Fair enough.
Which is, I guess, a different way of saying the same thing. But that was one surprise to me. Many people I talked to swore by making marijuana tea. So they would take the leaves of the marijuana plant or the flower itself, the bud, and soak that in hot water and drink that. And it turns out that you're not really getting any of the active ingredients of marijuana, cannabinoids, THC, CBD, others, out of the bud into that tea water if you just use boiling hot water. You need to use something that cannabinoids are soluble in, like alcohol or butter. But there are a lot of people who swear by this, but there's really not a whole lot of evidence to support it. So yes, that was certainly one surprise to me. I tried marijuana tea, got no effect whatsoever. Also, took the better part of a Saturday afternoon to try marijuana-infused beer and wine. The beer tasted just god-awful, and the wine tasted like wine, but there really wasn't much in the way of THC or CBD in that stuff, as near as I could tell.
So you mentioned benefits that patients have found when using medical marijuana. What are some of the detriments? What are some of the damage that can be done when it comes to the use of medical marijuana?
Sure. It's a hard question to answer because most of the research that's been done on risks of marijuana have been done on recreational users. And recreational users, people sometimes who have used for years, often with many other drugs, many of which are illegal, it's hard to look at risks that appear in that population and then say that people who use medically are going to be subject to the same risks. Different people using in different ways, often with a lot of other differences and use of other drugs. From what we can tell, though, the couple of risks that I'm actually very certain about are the risk of driving while under the influence. It's pretty clear, both from driving simulators and then some research that I did in getting into a car with one of my patients when he was stoned, that being stoned definitely impairs your ability to drive. So that's definitely one. The risk of addiction is also, I think, very real. I never thought of marijuana as being addictive, not in the same way that heroin or cocaine are addictive, and it turns out that it is. There is an addiction syndrome. There's also a syndrome of withdrawal. People who use marijuana frequently and then stop using develop withdrawal symptoms, just as people who use heroin frequently stop develop withdrawal symptoms. So those are two risks we know about. There are a lot of other risks like schizophrenia or psychosis or strokes that have been suggested but which we don't know about. And last but not least, one risk I really expected to find that turns out not to be true is lung damage. You know, you think that if you smoke enough marijuana, just like if you smoke enough cigarettes, eventually that will cause lung damage, and it turns out that doesn't seem to be the case. And it's probably just a matter of dosing. In order to get lung damage from smoking tobacco, you need to smoke 2, 3, sometimes 4 packs a day for a long period of time. And most people that I've met just couldn't even dream of smoking 40 or 60 joints a day for 20 or 30 years. So that's one risk that doesn't seem to be real.
So is marijuana a medicine?
It's a great question. I don't think of it as a medicine in the same way that penicillin or Tylenol is a medicine. When you go to your local pharmacy, you look for a bottle of Tylenol, you get a pill that has exactly 650 milligrams of Tylenol in it. That's a drug. It's a compound or a preparation with a defined dose, with defined effects. What you get in marijuana is really a mix. You get a little bit of THC and CBD and cannabinol and a whole bunch of other compounds mixed in there too. So I don't think of it as a drug. It may be clarified, extracted, and synthesized to become a drug eventually in a variety of forms. Right now I think of it more as an herbal remedy, and that's not to dismiss it. There are plenty of herbal remedies like St. John's wort for depression or sawtooth palmetto for prostatic hypertrophy. These are all medications. Herbal medications that are recommended, that work, that are supported by randomized controlled trials. They're not drugs, but they're still useful therapies. So I think that's, in my mind at least, that's where marijuana is right now. It's in the same class of herbal medications. That could change, probably will, as we learn more. But that's, at least in my mind, where it is now.
So as you were doing the research for your book, Stoned, A Doctor's Case for Medical Marijuana, you mentioned the surprise about not causing lung damage, surprises about other effects. But what was the most shocking revelation you had as you were putting together this book?
I think for me, there's a really interesting science of how the active ingredients in marijuana work. It's not just a matter of taking a couple of puffs on a joint and no longer caring that you have pain or nausea or other symptoms. There are these cannabinoids in marijuana that actually bind very specifically to receptors in the brain and elsewhere that are part of the so-called endocannabinoid system, the system that we all have in us. And marijuana, when it works therapeutically, is kind of hacking its way into that system and tricking our body into thinking that's what's binding to that particular receptor in the brain or in the lungs or in the liver or wherever is actually one of these natural endocannabinoid hormones or neurotransmitters that we have in all of us. So you're not just taking a puff on a joint, you're really infiltrating a very, very complex endocannabinoid system that is present in all of the organ systems of our body, from the brain to the reproductive system. And that opens up lots of opportunities for therapy and potential risks, I guess, down the road. But it was a reminder to me that there's a lot we don't know. And it may be that the science of marijuana looks very, very different 5 or 10 years from now as we understand that endocannabinoid system, as we understand how the active ingredients in marijuana do what they seem to be doing.
What is your perspective with the legalization of both medical marijuana and recreational marijuana? What do you feel, this is good or bad?
It really depends on how it's done. I think some states are being very, very careful, very, very thoughtful. States like Maryland, I think, are going at this very, very carefully with a lot of safeguards, and they're setting the bar pretty high. And they're saying, look, if you want to sell this stuff to patients, you really have to know your stuff. You have to be a legitimate organization. You have to have procedures of testing and training in place. They're really taking this seriously. And that's not to denigrate the experience in other states like California. California really was the first in this race. They put these laws together a long, long time ago, and they're beginning to revise those laws. So the initial California law was really pretty wide open. I think laws that have come since then have really tightened it up, and I think those laws make sense. The big challenge, though, is a lot of the uses, as I said before, of medical marijuana aren't supported by the evidence. And I think we as a society really need to come to grips with that. Do we really need randomized controlled trial evidence for everything? Or should we give people the opportunity to use it based on trial and error and learn? And I've really come down, I think my thinking has evolved, even after the book came out, to be more in that second camp. You look at other quote-unquote drugs that are out there, tobacco, alcohol, like those are available as long as you're over the age of 21 to pretty much everybody, and those drugs have arguably greater risks for many people than marijuana does. So although it's reasonable, I think, to require some evidence to get people to use marijuana, I think restricting it inordinately probably doesn't make sense. That's the medical case. Recreationally, I don't know. I think many states are moving in that direction anyway, and it's difficult to say anything that would change the direction of that train because it seems to have left the station.
Well, I greatly appreciate your very thoughtful pros and cons when it comes to medical marijuana. It very valuable. Thank you, Doctor.
Okay, thank you.
David Kasseret, MD. His book is Stoned, A Doctor's Case for Medical Marijuana. If you can learn more, at our website, wvxu.org. This is the Book Club at 91.7.